your
Blog Talk Radio.
And we say good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and it is my pleasure, along with guest co-host Carrie Kelly, to invite your participation in this your No Show on the Renford Broadcast Radio Network of positive shows built around your interest and your life. This is the show about new thought and metaphysics. New thought simply means a new way of thinking, and metaphysics means moving or looking beyond the physical, to look in between the spaces and to know that there where nothing is, God is, peace is, love is, and joy is, but it is up to us, each and every one of us, to find it, to move into that space and to appreciate and take advantage of the opportunities that God, universal impersonal principle, is providing for us, a space where healings are taking place literally right in front of our eyes. You may join our conversation on the No Show by calling in at 347-838-9142 if you have joined us online. And then you'll be able to ask your question directly and to hear the answer in that way. And we can ask follow-up questions with you as well. We are so grateful that this evening our dear friend is back with us, Reverend Dr. C. Will Mercer, who wants to just be known as Will. He says, just call him. Just make sure that it's not too late for dinner. Tonight we are going to talk with him again, as we have before, about his phenomenal book, and that book is Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, 365 Days of Inspiration from the Women of New Thought, with special forewords by Cynthia James and Michael Bernard Beckwith. We know you know who those folks are, and we know that you appreciate who it is that they are and how they show up in the world, just as you appreciate the respect from us. And good evening, Will. How are you, my friend, and how are things going?
I'm just fine, and it's so much fun to be with you again, Robert. Thank you.
I always enjoy that opportunity, my friend. Can't wait for you to get back. We're always looking forward to that and welcoming you. You, Carrie, and I are excited that you take the time to stop by and visit with us, because we know that you are a busy, busy, busy man, and that you have 364 other days, but that each and every one of them is spoken for in some way. But still, you stop by here and you visit with us. Talk to us about what you have been up to since we last spoke. How your book is now being received, who it is that is talking about it, and how people are using it, Will, to help themselves and to help others with courage, conviction, and consciousness.
Well, I think it's been a very interesting reception that it's received, in part from the general audience that is enjoying it, but as much from the contributors who brought names and familiarity to me for some of the women with whom I was as yet unfamiliar. And it's been a blessing in a variety of directions. So I'm very tickled to be able to report that I pretty well exhausted the first printing and will not wait long before we send this to the presses again, because it seems to be coming, or it seems to be becoming, a very popular book, and I'm so grateful for that, for the messages that it conveys for people.
I want to know who some of those contributors are. We mentioned two people at the beginning of the program, that being Michael Bernard Beckwith and Cynthia James, both of those talented individuals, but I know that you have a number of other folks as well that have been supportive and helpful, including that beautiful wife of yours. So tell us who some of those people are, and let's give them some kudos as well right now.
Well, I'd like to point out two examples, and they're two among many. But one example would be Reverend Dr. Gregory Pitts, who is the current minister at the Triangular Church in Los Angeles, a church actually founded by his grandmother back in 1930. Pearlwood, known as Mother Pearl, started a New Thought church at that time, later became part of the religious science community through Ernest Holmes. But the church was inherited, essentially, or the ministry was inherited by her son as she left the scene in the mid-1970s. And then her grandson, Gregory Pitts, later became the minister. And as I tried to locate materials about her, I made efforts to contact him. And it took some time for me to connect with him. But he was a marvelous source of material from his grandmother back in the late 30s and early 40s when she was most active. She was active much beyond that. So that was a real important connection for me because it gave me a sense for how deep New Thought has penetrated in some church communities and in some families. So a third-generation minister in New Thought is a wonderful thing to behold. The other person I would mention quickly, and there are others to talk about, would be Carol Huntley, who helped me source material from her mother, Doris Jones, who was quite well known in California during her years. The interesting aspect of that particular contact was that I had some difficulty locating her because the name I was given initially was Betty Jones. And I called around trying to find where Betty Jones was from, and they said, maybe you're thinking of Doris Jones. And I said, okay, let's look for Doris Jones. And lo and behold, I was in touch with Carol after a couple of pinball bounces. And when we met on the telephone the first time, there was this really significant pause in the conversation about pulling materials from her mother's collected works. And she informed me that it had been about 10 years since her mother had passed, I believe in 2005. And although she had her mother's materials, she had not been able to look at them. It was one of those points of resistance that I can understand when you've lost someone so dear. And yet she acknowledged in that phone conversation that it must be time or else she would not have heard from me. And so she went into her mother's materials and brought me some wonderful pearls of wisdom that I could share that were all Doris.
Wow. You know, I call that serendipity, synchronicity, and spirituality, meaning that
all
there
in
are
one.
No accidents in life, no accidents in life, and that everything that happens by divine appointment and through spiritual awareness and spiritual acuity. And I love it when that type of thing happens because it just lets me know that I'm traveling down the right highway, that I'm moving in the direction that I need to move in. And usually, well, not always, but sometimes it will come at those times when I'm a little frustrated with the process. I know that you never will ever get frustrated with the process and that you never ever have any challenges or any days that are making you pull the hair out that you have. See, I don't have that problem. I don't have any more to pull out, but unless
I don't have much.
My eyebrows.
I will tell you that I do have my moments, but by the same token, I will tell you that the preparation of the book was the most fulfilling activity of my spiritual life. Meeting up with these women, first of all, and getting to know them through their writing and appreciating their outlook, and then connecting with the people who knew them best, people who would go out into the hallways of churches and pull pictures off the wall to scan them for me, so that I would have as many photographs of these women as I could manage to obtain. Day after day in the preparation of this book, I was so blessed and felt that these women were living again as a result of the ability to bring their work back in front of the general public.
That's right. Absolutely. And that is the truth. You include Mary Baker Eddy in your book, and many of us have been taught that she is extraneous or ancillary to this New Thought movement, as we call it. What are your thoughts relative to that?
Well, the way that I phrase it is that were it not for Mary Baker Eddy, we would never have met Emma Curtis Hopkins under the terms that we did. And Emma Curtis Hopkins became the teacher of teachers in New Thought. Mary Baker Eddy certainly laid the groundwork for so much of what came later. And the interesting aspect of that is that had she been a little bit easier to get along with, she would have held on to the likes of Emma Curtis Hopkins and Oliver Sabin and others, who ultimately, Ursula Gestefeld is the third one, who she literally chased off the bus, only to have them develop into characters of great worth and great educational expansion for us in New Thought. God love Mary Baker Eddy for the work that she did, because without her, we might not have New Thought as we have it today. So I count her among the blessings for our movement, and her material, if you read it, relative to anything other than medication and medical care and things of that kind that she was against, is pure New Thought. You read her version of the Lord's Prayer and you just bask in it, because it's marvelous work.
It seems to me that with everything that we do, we have to pull the kernels of corn that are applicable to us and that we resonate with whenever it is that we're reading anything from anybody, because we don't oftentimes have the advantage of a beautiful book like you have prepared for us, but we can get that same feeling. It can be as though that person is seated in the room with us. And so I would imagine that you had some of those feelings as well. I think it was Napoleon Hill, as he was putting together Think and Grow Rich, and sat and had all of the materials from the different people there on the table, and he imagined himself having conversations, or it appeared that the works were coming to him in such a strong way that he felt as though he was seated across from them and involved intimately almost with them. And I imagine that after having delved into this work the way that you did, you feel and felt some of that same way. Is that a fair assessment of some of the things that you felt as well?
It certainly is. I reached a point fairly early in the preparation of the book where I had to have a candle lit on my desk as I foraged through the various works that these women had created. I tried to find their keynote. I tried to find the materials from them that were most important, or among the important statements that they made that were available. But you definitely develop a kinship with the people that, about whom you are writing. And when you are searching through their materials, to read and find the best of what they had to say on certain topics, it's even more penetrating. And you begin to know these women in a very visceral way, based strictly on what they had to say and how they viewed their God and their relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My teacher and minister, actually the first Unity minister was Reverend Amalia Frank, and Amalia was 93 plus when she transitioned some time ago. But I never will forget she and the poet laureate who wrote the poem that went to the moon with Unity. His name is running
Freeman.
Away from me, right? James Dillard Freeman. Thank you. James Dillard Freeman would come often to visit with us. And as a professional photographer, I had the opportunity, of course, to photograph them many times individually and collectively. But Amaya's favorite picture, and the picture that she always wanted for me to replicate and duplicate again and again and again for her, was the one that I did of she and James Dillard Freeman together. And, you know, I then later understood, because at that time I didn't understand the importance of who it was that he was, and actually also who it was that she was. So that's leading me to this question. Well, who, when is it? And I know that you're just completing this activity, and now what you want to do is rest for a while. I understand that, and we're having a problem letting you rest because of the fact that there are now so many awesome women, especially, but men as well, who are either transitioning or have transitioned, that others coming behind us need to know about, like Amalia Frank. So I want to go ahead and ask you now, and then we'll come back to some of the other stuff, whether or not I know that you're needing to sit on your laurels for a moment, but whenever it is that you decide to get up, what are the possibilities of your writing about some of the folks that have left us in the last 5, 7, 3 10, 15 years, and who would some of those people be that others have talked to you about?
Well, there's quite a number, and I should predicate what I'm going to say about that by indicating that I'm 3 for 3, Robert, right now. One book in 2014, one in 2015, and one in 2016. Yes, I do want to rest a bit, but I think there are marvelous souls, and James Dillard Freeman is certainly one of them. I don't know if anyone has attempted a biography, but, you know, he was on the scene from the late 40s or early 50s all the way until his passing. Produced mm-hmm. wonderful, wonderful work. In fact, I do a lot of weddings here in New York, and very frequently the wedding blessing at the end of the ceremony is his, because it is a remarkable piece of prose unto itself. But he is so well regarded generally that he deserves some attention. He's certainly not alone. In the Unity movement, you also have Charles and Myrtle's granddaughter, who's in the book. There are other mm-hmm. Unity people that I would enjoy spending more time with, and that's what it amounts to, is really focusing in on someone and deciding that you're going to be my companion for a while, and I want to spend time learning more about you and sharing more about you with the world. What I'm finding is that this book, which started out looking at the founder's work, really did stretch up until recent years. I have a couple of, more than two, several ministers who passed just within the last 2 or 3 years. Some as late as 2015, whose work was important to preserve from my standpoint because they were a recent example of the continuing role that women play in sustaining this movement. They were important at the beginning, and they are every bit as important now as they were then. And I just enjoy so much being certain that they are not forgotten.
That's right. That's right. And as you so capably said, there are so many others who do need to be remembered. And I think it extremely important, and I so thank you for all of the hours that you have somehow managed to stay away from that beautiful wife of yours, and that you have locked or sequestered yourself in your study in order to complete this job. And people don't realize it, but as ministers, it is challenging for us to pull away from our families and from our loved ones to do the work that we have to do, even as wonderful as the work is, and because of the fact that we do, in fact, have to do it. Another gentleman, of course, for one of the upcoming books that I really want to for us to take a look at including is Reverend Lafayette Seymour, and out of Washington, D.C., who is just a stalwart individual. And you might have known him from your work with the International New Thought Alliance, but he was my boss while I was doing work with them. And I tell you, it is always an honor just to be in his presence, if nothing else. Always an honor. Let me go ahead and bring in my sidekick here, and Carrie Kelly, because I want to hear from her what her thoughts might be in terms of this awesome book that you have put together for all of us. Carrie, do you have any comments relative to what we've said, or questions of your own of our guests?
Well, I have both, actually. The first is a comment that I am so fascinated by this work and the people that you have highlighted. And so I feel like I want to go and read everything each and every one of them have out there. I figured that would take me a few lifetimes, but I need to get started, you know? And the other thing is that I love that there's 365, like for folks like me with that short attention span for reading things, I can, you know, read a passage a day and feel like I've accomplished something in a week, in a month, in a year, you know. But I'm very, very fascinated by the process of a man who decided to highlight so many women. You know, I know it was divinely inspired, but how long did you have to fight with that divine marching order in order to get this job done?
Well, there was no fight involved. It all began with Melinda Kramer. I served as president of the Divine Science Federation, and in the process of performing that work, uncovered some material that was shared in my first book, Present at the Beginning. And that revolved around the first classes that she held outside San Francisco in 1890, bringing her to Denver to work with Fanny Brooks James and ultimately Nona Brooks, who became the inheritors of Divine Science when Melinda passed. The second book, Christology Connection, was an expansion on the first book because there was more material and more depth that I wanted to reach related to Melinda's zenith, if you will, the height of her career around 1899 to 1905. And so I had this whole collection of women that I'd been working with because both of the books involved a bit of Mary Baker Eddy, a bit of Emma Curtis Hopkins, and then focus on other women within the Divine Science movement. But at some point along the way, I developed a list of women who I was familiar with in New Thought, and it was a fascination. I mean, I'm married to one of the most powerful spiritual forces at least within the tri-state region here in New York. She certainly is way ahead of me in that regard, but the reality is that my relationship with women is a loving one. And when I first started to gather energy around this book, I had several women quite publicly and quite skeptically say, well, you know, we don't need you to talk about women. Why are you doing that? Where do you get off talking about women? And I don't know what they expected me to do that was in the sense that I might somehow malign anyone. But the reality was I sensed and it was clear to me that the women of New Thought were the driving force in the literature of New Thought. And so I uncovered this list about a year ago and looked at it and thought, well, you know, I've got like 30 names here. And so I began to search for more. And I got up to about 40 or so, and I thought, well, you know, I can make a year's calendar book out of this in the sense that there were enough people that I could spread them through the year and so on. So I was fascinated to do that. But then the process of research uncovered so many more. The truth is that this is a representative sample, and it is a key to the other works that these women developed. In fact, one of the things that I urge the readers to do is to take these small samples of work from these remarkable people and to look further themselves. So if you become attached to Harriet Hale Ricks or if you become attached to Myrtle Fillmore, go and find more about them. It's out there. Mm-hmm. There's marvelous material that I could never have hoped to include that is important material that anyone who's attracted to this book will at some point become attached or connected with one or more of the women that they find here. And therein lies the beauty for them in being able to say, wow, I'd like to know more about her and research and learn more and read more and find your own niche in terms of the voices that speak most clearly to you. There's so much here that is not within the book.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the things that you say on the back of the book is the written words and recorded voices of the women of New Thought touch millions among us each day. Here are 365 important, inspirational messages from 107 women of spiritual courage, conviction, and high consciousness. Here are the noteworthy women you'll find inside, and then you name some of those names. And I think this is a wonderful time for us to segue because what I'd like to do now is to go to May 25th, which I believe is the day that we are on right now. And I would like to read from what is in your book for today's date and then let you tell us about that particular entity. And for May 25th, let us learn from Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, 365 Days of Inspiration from the Women of New Thought by C. Will Mercer. The title is Let Us Learn, very appropriate for today. Let us learn to have faith in the master power of the soul self within, and then address the master after this manner. Indwelling master, thou knowest me. Thou art able to fulfill my need, and I ask thee while in sleep and while in work that you go forth to bring for me the wisdom and intelligence of God that will work through me to manifest the harmony, life, love, and joy that I do so much desire. Indwelling master, I have faith in thee, and I leave this request trusting that thou wilt reveal to me the perfect way. And that is from Anna L. Palmer, published in Divine Science Monthly, June 1933, page 58. Would you tell us a little bit about that piece and if anything comes to mind from that experience, Will?
Well, indeed. Anna Palmer happened to be one of a fairly sizable group of women that surrounded Nona Brooks and Fannie James as they grappled with the management of the Divine Science movement after the death of Melinda Kramer. This was a remarkable group of women who surrounded Nona and became the chief teachers, administrators of the Divine Science College in Denver, and Anna Palmer was among the very earliest. I don't think she lived much beyond 1923, if I'm remembering correctly. I have to look back at my own book here to be able to tell you for sure. She lasted a bit longer. She lasted until 1944, a year before Nona Brooks passed. But she served as a chief speaker. The material that was drawn from the Divine Science Monthly included whole months of material that were created by a given writer or a given minister or teacher. And Anna Palmer was one who wrote month after month of complete studies day to day. So it was a matter of going into the Divine Science Monthlies back from that era that I could still put my hands on original copies of and reading through a whole month worth of writing of hers to determine what would be the most appropriate to share. So Anna is a very key figure in the Divine Science movement, but she comes from a period where the cooperation and collegiality between all of the denominations was very strong. So she was a character that was familiar in INTA circles, as was Nona Brooks and a group of others. And she's an important character through the early 1940s because she played a key role in the movement expanding beyond Denver in the years between 1906 and 1940, let's say, when people were ordained and they were sent out. This was not a matter of, having 10 ministers get ordained and they all live within a block of each other. This was a matter of taking the faith and then going forth, as the disciples did, to spread the good word and to heal the sick and raise the dead, if you will.
Yeah, good point. Speaking of which, and that's a wonderful lead-in to this question that I have often asked, because it seemed that there was more faith involved during that period of time, and people were steadfast in their faith. They would stand on principle. As a matter of fact, principle over principle over something. Anyway, I forget it right now. But that always stuck with me, although it's not sticking with me right now. But principle over anything else. The principle being spirit, being God. Did you notice that, or am I off base here? Does it seem that there was, and perhaps because there weren't the television sets weren't as popular at that time, there weren't as many means of communication, but it seemed that people's faith was stronger.
I would agree, and there are some remarkable examples of things that we don't hear about or see as much about today that were occurring with some greater regularity back in that era. Let's say, 1900 to 1935 or 40. One of them was Nona Brooks, and it's interesting that one of the women who's included in the book is Grace Fouse, who was an important Divine Science minister in Washington, D.C., and she was ordained there by Harvey Hardman, who stood in for Nona when she would retire periodically and then come back. But the interesting story that Grace Fouse tells, not included in my book, but one to share about Nona, is that Grace was married to a dentist when she lived in Denver taking classes before her ordination. And as a favor to Nona Brooks, her husband invited her to come to his office so that he could examine her teeth and be sure that she was in good shape. And they found several cavities in Nona's mouth, and he suggested that she could set an appointment and come back, and he would begin to work on these. And her response to him was, well, that's okay, I'll treat. And she went home, and about 6 months later, she was brought back to the dentist's office, and lo and behold, the dentist could no longer find the cavities.
Oh, my goodness.
Is an ability, yeah. And I do believe you're right, in the sense that we don't have, or we suffer from distraction to such a great degree in today's world that turning off the noise and being able to plug into source is something that takes a great deal more effort, I believe, today, but yet it still occurs, and it is still within our reach, and we simply have to unplug from those things that don't feed our good and plug into those things that do. And we all know that spirit is our source. So
yes,
turning off the television is a key ingredient to reaching that place that so many of us wish to be, but have difficulty turning off the, what do they call it, the noise that comes from the never-ending chatter in our minds, and it's only increased by the way that we communicate today.
Yeah, they call it the monkey mind, turning off the monkey mind. That's right. And the other thing that I was looking for a little bit earlier was principle over personality, and that today could help a lot of us out for certain. Establishing principle, which is the God force, the universal I am that is within, over the little me, as the gentleman in Maryland used to call it, the little me over the big me. The little me always wants its way, but the God me, the God force that is within me, is the one that is really, really, really always, in fact, in charge. And so that is what all of this is all about. Stand by for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening, and we are so grateful that you decided to stop by here. This is The No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and our guest is C. Will Mercer, Reverend Dr. C. Will Mercer. And his book, his awesome and phenomenal book, is Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, 365 Days of Inspiration from the Women of New Thought, with special forewords by Cynthia James, Reverend Cynthia James, and Michael Bernard Beckwith, Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith. Both of those folks, I think, are out in California, in the California area, but C. Will is in the New York area. And we are all together through this marvel of technology that allows us to be wherever it is that we will or may and still reach out and touch and grab each other and do some marvelous work. And so that is what it is that he is doing. He is doing a marvelous work, and we want for him to share with you how it is that you may get this fabulous book that I just mentioned to you. I know that it's available, I believe, on Amazon.com. Will, but where else might these folks get this book?
Well, Amazon is certainly a wonderful source. DeVores & Company carries all three of my books. And for any of our listeners who are involved with church bookstores and so on, I think DeVores is the place you'd want to go. Individual
Absolutely.
Copies are available from myself, from me, if anyone wants to go to Great ntwomen.com. That will put you in touch with the website that offers the books for sale there. And of course, if they're sent out from my supply here at home, I'll autograph them and inscribe them as readers may want that done.
Absolutely. They definitely want that done. As a matter of fact, I am holding my copy right here. And it says, for Robert, warm regards, Will, and that means all the world to me, because not only do I have this awesome book, but my friend has been kind enough to autograph it for me, and that means the world to me. If you don't mind, I'd like to read one more piece here from August 16th, Will, and that is by, I guess, a little more current person, although it says 1925. I didn't realize that Florence Scovel Shinn was actually putting materials out that long ago, but it's called Real Love. Real love is selfless and free from fear. It pours itself out upon the object of its affection without demanding any return. Its joy is in the joy of giving. Love is God in manifestation and the strongest magnetic force in the universe. Pure, unselfish love draws to itself its own. It does not need to seek or demand. Scarcely anyone had the faintest conception of real love. Scarcely anyone had the faintest conception of real love. Man is selfish, tyrannical, or fearful in his affections, thereby losing the thing he loves. Jealousy is the worst enemy of love, for the imagination runs riot, seeing the loved one attracted to another. And invariably, these fears objectify if they are not neutralized. That coming from Florence Scovel Shinn, The Game of Life and How to Play It, 1925. Page 47, and no known copyright is in effect. Tell us about that piece, and what your thoughts are relative to Florence Scovel Shinn.
Well, this is drawn from her most famous book, which is called The Game of Life and How to Play It. Many of us are familiar with that. My earliest Unity teacher out in Phoenix, Arizona, named Flo Dibley, who is Reverend Dr. Flo Dibley. When I first encountered this book with her, she said this was a book she read every year and had been reading it every year throughout her entire career, and I met her at about age 75. The truth is that Florence was one of those early independent voices that isn't necessarily connected with any of the known denominations, but she was engaged in New Thought work and literature early and on her own, and went for about a 20 to 25 year period of great activity. Florence Scovel Shinn, if you see various photographs of her, went from a rather dowdy looking woman to a very glamorous kind of character whose photograph I have in the book. But she just exploded with important concepts that were being stated for women by women or by a woman at a time when women's voices were still somewhat less available. And so the result was that Florence Scovel Shinn became a very early lighthouse, if you will, for a beacon is what I was going for, that drew a lot of other people into New Thought who didn't necessarily come through one of the denominations like Unity or Religious Science.
And, you know, there are just so many phenomenal and awesome women in this book. And, of course, you had 365 days to work with, and I imagine that you could have put at least another 365 from the other ones that you were not able to use. What are your, and I don't want to say favorites from here, but what when you look back at this phenomenal work, and you have to are forced by someone like me who has a radio program and you can only do so much. What are a few of those that you would pull from there, Will?
Well, I think that certainly Johnny Coleman comes to mind when you talk in those terms. And since we're doing a radio broadcast, if you look at February 18th, This was an interview that was conducted by Philippe Matthews back in Chicago around 2001, and he was asking these very key questions of Johnny, and I'll read just one of them. At Christ Universal Temple, Chicago, the mantra is, "It works if you work it." What does that mean? And she answers, "I work with Johnny Coleman all the time, and any lesson, prayer, or any sermon that I'm giving, I'm not really giving to the people sitting out there. I'm teaching Johnny Coleman. One day, as I was praying, that statement came, it works if you work it. It comes from within you, and if you are not meditating and have your attention stayed on God, you miss it. But I heard the Father say, it works if you work it. It can't work unless you work it. If it's not working, it's not God's fault, it is your fault. In order for prosperity, health, and peace to work, you've got to get rid of some things. You've got to let go of some things. You've got to stop gossiping. You've got to stop being jealous. You have got to let all of that go and realize that the same God that is within me is within you and can do for you the same things he has done for me." Now, this was truly a keynote for her, the it works if you work it phrase. In fact, they wear little emblematic medallions on their lapels that have that phrase on it out of Christ Universal Temple in Chicago and the whole UFBL movement. But here is a remarkable soul that came through the Unity education process and ordination process at a time when she was literally the only African-American woman at Unity Village, and she was not allowed to live in the village until she came close to graduation in around 1956. And yet she moved on and was a Unity minister for many years before she founded her own Universal Foundation for Better Living. And then she amassed a population of followers in Chicago and around the world that is unbelievable unto itself, given where she started and the materials that she was able to work with. Johnny is a favorite of mine, as is Mary Tumpkin, who I knew personally, and I'm so pleased that I'm able to bring her work back before the public, too. She's not been gone long, and so her memory is fresh with us, and yet we need to hear from her frequently because she had a lot of good things to say.
She did. And both Reverend Johnny Coleman and Reverend Mary Tumpkin are responsible for so many others. And they, too, were good friends of mine, much more Reverend Dr. Mary Tumpkin than the other, because of the fact that I worked closely with One God, One Thought Center for Better Living in Baltimore, Maryland. And Reverend Mary was always there. And Dr. Coleman, of course, would come through from time to time as well. And we just developed a phenomenal relationship. And as a professional photographer, she always admired Reverend Ann's portrait that I had done that was in her office. And she kept saying to me, "Now, Mac, when are you going to photograph me? When are you going to do my portrait?" And I said, "Reverend Mary, whenever it is that you want it done, wherever it is that you want it done, I will do it." And she would just laugh, and we would have the biggest fun over that. And one day I was photographing, Will, you'll appreciate this, doing, I don't know if it was Reverend Burnett Jones, who is now the minister there, or someone else. And whenever it is that I'm photographing, people have to understand there are about 15 million things that a professional photographer has to be thinking about and doing. So I'm walking down the aisle, and I was in my own world, and I didn't know who I was approaching or who was behind me or in front of me or in the sides of me. I just didn't know. And all of a sudden, I felt this tug on my shoulder, And I turned around, and it was Reverend Mary, and she said, I'm sorry, I just passed you, and I don't think I got a hug. Maybe I did from the wind or something, but it certainly was not from you. And I said, Reverend Mary, I am so sorry. And she said, you were in your own little world, weren't you? And I said, yes, ma'am, I was. So I just absolutely and unequivocally loved that woman for certain. I believe Carrie Kay is back with us. Let me bring her in and see if she would like to add anything to our conversation right now. She's out in Oakland, California. Well, now, who are the women that are out in and who are in your book from this period of time that are in the California area before I bring Carrie in?
Well, the one that comes to mind is Ida Elliott, who happened to be a niece of Melinda Kramer's, but she was ordained by Nona Brooks after Melinda had passed, probably ordained in about 1912 or 1913. But she, in fact, went to Oakland, California, and opened the second Divine Science School following the collapse of the school in San Francisco as a result of the great earthquake. So she is an important character. She actually lived into the 1950s, but she was an important character. She was included in the book that Ernest Holmes edited in 1941. I'm going to have to reach with it. Words
That's
That
okay.
Heal, I believe, was the book.
Right.
And,
Words That Heal.
Yeah, and she was a very key person in that realm. Of course, today we have, you know, the Up Church with Sherry James in Los Angeles. We have a lot of activity. In fact, there's probably more religious science activity historically in California than there is anywhere else, chiefly because that's where Ernest began his work. But as I began to gather materials, I found absolutely remarkable collections of women out in California of whom I was not unaware. There's one other quick point that I'd like to make before we talk to Carrie, and I'm anxious to hear from her.
No problem. No,
but
no,
if
go
we,
ahead, please.
If we're looking for someone who's kind of to the side of New Thought in many people's thinking, somewhat like Mary Baker Eddy, it would be Helen Schumann, who channeled the Course in Miracles. And I have studied the Course myself, and it's become a very popular addendum, if you will, to many Unity activities and many New Thought activities. But Helen deserves her place in this book as well, because she's much more recent. She passed in 1981. She did her chief work with A Course in Miracles back in the 60s, not to be published until about 1975. But her words, regardless of their source, are so important and so strong that it would not have been appropriate to leave her out of this book.
And where are her words located?
Well, I've got her here on May 9th.
May 9th. Okay.
And this is an interesting one because this is very clearly one of the early statements you hear when you read A Course in Miracles, and it's titled, Who Are God's Teachers? And I'll just read a bit of it.
You can read it all.
A teacher of God is anyone who chooses to be one. His qualifications consist solely in this. Somehow, somewhere, he has made a deliberate choice in which he did not see his interests as apart from someone else's. Once he has done that, his road is established and his direction is sure. A light has entered the darkness. It may be a single light, but that's enough. He has entered an agreement with God, even if he does not yet believe in him. He has become a bringer of salvation. He has become a teacher of God. They come from all over the world. They come from all religions and from no religion. They are the ones who have answered. The call is universal. It goes on all the time, everywhere. It calls for teachers to speak for it and redeem the world. Many hear it, but few will answer. Yet it is all a matter of time. Everyone will answer in the end, but the end can be a long, long way off. It is because of this that the plan of teachers was established. Their function is to save time. Each one begins as a single light, but with the call at its center is a light that cannot be limited, and each one saves 1,000 years of time as the world judges it. To the call itself, time has no meaning. This is just marvelous, marvelous material that speaks to us not only from the standpoint of our own faith, but the role that each one of us plays, whether intentionally or unintentionally, in advancing the work of spirit.
That's a beautiful piece. And we do know it well, because, of course, in Miracles, of course, is back in the spotlight, in the metaphysical spotlight once again. And I'm so happy to have all of these pieces. And I'm so glad that you, C. Will Mercer, decided to stop by and spend another piece of time with us, and we're going to have you back again and again and again and again. Let me bring Carrie Kay in now that she is back with us, I think, and just ask, Carrie, did you have any statements or questions that you wanted to ask relative to our discussion?
I am just going to say how grateful I am to have heard this piece that you just read. May 9th has a significance to me, and being a teacher, an unintentional teacher, is it resonated when you read it, and I'm so grateful that that I was here to be a part of this, and I'm thankful that you answered the call to put this work together and bring all this feminine wisdom to in one place, so that a person like me could have access to it. I just want to, you know, let you know how grateful I am for that, and you just keep it up, and thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Carrie. That's very sweet.
That is wonderful. Where do you go from here, see, Will Mercer? What's next for you? What's on the horizon next week, next month, next year? What is it that you are going to be involved in? Tell us a little bit about what you and your wife are doing there in your area.
Well, the next big activity that's coming up that I think will be very exciting for anyone who's able to get to Fort Lauderdale is the Divine Science Biennial Conference that we're going to have at the Sunshine Cathedral in Fort Lauderdale on July 27th through the 30th. A whole group of us will be gathering, not strictly divine science ministers and practitioners and so on, but people from other elements of New Thought or other aspects of New Thought, and we expect to share a great deal of wisdom. We'll have our wonderful friend Barbara King with us for our keynote speech and banquet on Friday night of that week, and it's going to be one of the best conferences in New Thought that'll be held this year. And so we're all very excited about that, and all you have to do is go on Facebook, and I'll have it up on my site, and other people will have it up on theirs, but it's going to be hard to miss. If you can make it, it's a great experience.
And what is the name of it again?
It's our Divine Science Conference. We hold one every 2 years, so we call it the Biennial Conference, and it will be held in Fort Lauderdale, July 27 to 30 at Sunshine Cathedral. Durrell Watkins, who is vice president of the Federation, our Divine Science Federation, is senior minister there, and his school is also one of our chief educational resources for New Thought and Divine Science in particular. And so
Excellent.
It's a great opportunity for all of us to get to know his ministry better, as well as share the wealth among ourselves and with others.
Excellent. Let me thank our guest and to share with you, ladies and gentlemen, for the last almost 60 minutes, we've been listening to C. Will Mercer. The book is courage, conviction, and consciousness. 365 days of inspiration from the Women of New Thought. Go forth into this week. We thank you for taking time from your schedule to be with us. You could have been elsewhere, but you chose to be here. We are so grateful, and we know that you have been blessed by this opportunity, and we expect to see you back here again on the No Show. May the blessings of God be upon you. May his peace abide with you, both now and forevermore. Into all that we do, we always say, yay, God, and thank you, God, for this experience. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate
you. Thank you.
And look forward to seeing you again. God bless. Thank you, C. Will. We'll take care now. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.